Welcome back to now session one after the introduction of this class on the theology of rest. Once again, my name is Jim Anderson, and I'm assisted by my wife, Lois. As we begin this session, let me give you an overview of the entire course. The course is divided into three segments. The first discusses how God is actually pleased when we rest. Believe it or not, God likes you when you rest, not just when you serve Him, but when you rest. And I'll give five sessions on that subject, how God is pleased by our resting. The next segment will be five sessions pertaining to how do we rest? How do we rest in a world that is so restless, with so much to do, be it to just take care of ourselves, to make our households, to do our jobs, to raise our children? How in the world, how in God's kingdom are we going to rest? So I'll be showing you practical ways in which we can rest as suggested in the Bible. And the third segment will have to do with taking that rest that we've had, that resolve in heart and mind that we've settled with God. How do we take that rest then into our workplaces, into our homes, so that we are more restful people? We are people at peace with God and our surroundings. So those are the three segments which we'll be talking about. Right now, we're going to go back to the beginning. And when I say beginning, to the book of beginnings, which is the book of Genesis. That's what the word Genesis means. It's about beginnings. And those early chapters of Genesis are foundational. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There are seven Hebrew words that make up the first sentence or the first verse of Genesis 1:1. It has been said that if we stumble over these words, we'll have a hard time with the rest of the Bible. We must accept this foundational thought, concept, that there was a beginning to our world, and God was there before the beginning, and He created. It was made by the mighty work of God. How it was created in precise words is not given to us. But the fact that God created is the main thought that we are to take from Genesis 1:1. Again, if we stumble there in disbelief, we're going to have a hard time with the rest of the Bible. The Bible assumes from that point on that you believe that God is and that He is creator of the world, the universe, and everything in it. Such beginnings are definitely foundational to our thinking and our well-being. The book of beginnings is the book of Genesis. God made man in His image. Now, I would like for you on your own to read all of Genesis 1, but for right now, we're going to read just verses 27 through 31. And I'm going to ask my wife, Lois, to assist me again in reading this segment of Scripture, Genesis 1, 27 through 31.
So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the field and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
After every day, God said, "It is good." Every day of creation, every phase of creation. But after the sixth day, after man is made, He says, it is very good, very good. Now, the whole world reflects the glory of God. We have it said for us in Psalm 19. The earth bears the glory of God, and all creation bears the glory of God. But when we come to man, we find that man is special among all the creations because he bears the image of God. The created world may reflect him, but only man bears the image, the likeness of God. There's something about man that's different than all the animals, all the other creatures, and that is this image of God in man. Theologians have debated forever about what this image is, and I'm not going to give a satisfactory explanation in any detail at this point as well. But very simply, we reflect God in his actions, in our fellowship with him. We have a connection with God, or we're supposed to. Of course, the fall of man broke that connection, and it is not what it ought to be. But there's a yearning in man to be like God, near to God, because we bear his image. Now, in bearing his image, we're apt to do what God does. And we see that in Genesis 1, in this book of foundation, God works, God creates. And so if we're going to be like God, we're apt to work as well. In Genesis 1, God works and he creates, and we've already seen that. It's been read for us. But in Genesis 2, something else takes place. Yes, if we're going to be like God, we're likely to work. We're going to be creative individuals. And it's wonderful to see how man can create far beyond what animals or creatures can create. It's interesting to see the engineering of man in these more modern days and all the technology that has gone, which really is a discovery of the many things that are in our planet or on our planet. Well, if we're going to be like God, yes, we will work. But we find that Genesis 2 is also foundational, and it's just as important as Genesis 1. In it, we find that God rests, and as we bear his image, we are likely to rest. Genesis chapter 2, verse 1 says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array, and by the seventh day God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." So, yes, we're likely to work in the image of God. We're likely to be creative in the image of God. But if we're going to be more like God, we're going to have to learn how to rest as well. And that's a challenge for some of us, many of us. Both are from God. This is before the fall. God works, and man is apt to work and create and rule the animals, the world, and conserve and so forth. He is to master them creatively and benevolently upon the earth. But then he must move into a phase of rest as well. God works, man works. God rests, and in his image, we're going to rest. John Salehammer, a theologian who I've gotten to know over the years, has said the following: "It is likely as well that the author intended the reader to understand the account of the seventh day in light of the image of God theme in the sixth day. If the purpose of pointing to the likeness between man and his creator was to call upon the reader to be more like God," Leviticus chapter 11, verse 45 says, "Be holy as I am holy," then it is significant that the account of the seventh day stresses that very thing which the writer elsewhere so ardently calls upon the reader to do, to rest on the seventh day. And he's referring to the book of Exodus, where the commandment is spoken, the fourth commandment, yes, you are to rest. So this is a preface, a prelude, a beginning, a little hint of what is to come. God will eventually make a commandment about rest, but right now he's showing us how to do it. It's like a child that needs a parent to lie down with that child when they're young before they will rest and go to sleep. So God shows how it's done by resting. Rest is one of the ways in which the likeness of God is evident in man. Now you stop and think about that. You might say to yourself, I was taught that I only reflect God's image when I work, when I create, when I'm ruling something. But resting is just a necessity as a human being. But beyond that, God lied down or rested to show us how it's done. And this may seem quite mysterious regarding a God that doesn't get tired, and we'll talk about that in just one moment. But I want to point out, as I've just said, I want to emphasize that it's just important that we get the words in Genesis 2 as a foundation to our hearts and minds as we get and understand the whole chapter of Genesis 1. Genesis 1, God works in six segments, which he calls days. Genesis 2, he stops and he rests. And we'll talk about the significance of that in just a matter of moments. Now, all too often, we only see the dynamic of creation, and many theologians argue as to how long a day is and what exactly took place and the order of it and how did God do all of this. And it's fine to examine all of chapter 1, but we're in error if we look only at chapter 1 and don't see that God rested and he was showing us the way, a rhythm of life, a rhythm. There's work 6 days, and then there's a rhythm, a day to rest, to cease, to stop, and we must not miss the rhythm. Years ago, I majored in music, and I had to learn to obey the rests, playing in an orchestra. And you may think of some music, and without the rest, it wouldn't be as exciting. Rest brings anticipation to silence. Like you take Beethoven's Fifth Symphony that is well known. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Now, if we just went dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun, it wouldn't be as interesting. And so when you work, it gets monotonous. Music has rest. God showed that the rests were good and right, and he showed us there's a rhythm. Don't get out of beat or out of rhythm with God. You'll wear out. You'll be tired. You'll be monotonous as an individual and person. God, in his creativity, remembered that we needed to rest. So God establishes work and rest as a rhythm. God made man in his image, obviously to work and to rest. Made in his image, we are to work. And if a person thinks they shouldn't work when they are able to, they're wrong. But one is just as wrong to go on working and ignoring the times of rest, the weekly rhythm of rest.
Even a small contribution can make a big difference. Jesus fed 5,000 people because of a little boy's 5 loaves. Regardless of the amount, your contribution is very important and greatly appreciated. Visit us at tvsseminary.com.